Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. All right, we are back and we're talking about comics.
Comics.
As always.
As always. Maybe some games in there, too?
No, just comics.
Oh, okay. We just did our game day
thing. Yeah. Oh, we'll kind of talk about games.
Yeah. A little bit. They're going to be there.
Anyway, this is the last podcast before the inventory sale starts. So on Monday, we'll begin our annual inventory clearance sale, where we'll clear out games and comics and even some toys that have not been selling for the last couple of years. There's always good stuff in there. Next week, as our 150th podcast hits us, we will give you some of our picks we think you should grab off that table. But the deal with this is...
It begins next week?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I love that this podcast is always shocked to you. Like, I announce a news thing, you're like, wait, that's happening?
It's so soon? Shouldn't we have been pulling all this stuff for the inventory? We're terribly behind, people.
God. We know what we're doing, people. I promise.
No, we don't.
Dave doesn't know.
Randy's
Nick and I.
Wrong.
Nick
Dave
and
has
I.
No faith. Randy and I have complete faith.
Nick and I have a plan. We've been running this whole thing.
All right.
We had this plan started a couple weeks ago.
So. Anyway, the inventory sale will have some cool stuff on the table. It is a sale. The discount starts at 35%. Then you roll 2d6, so you get an additional 2 to 12%. So it's anywhere from 37 to 47% off, which is pretty good. If you have a rogue card, you get automatic critical hit, double damage. You don't have to worry about rolling. You just automatically get 12% bonus.
Yes,
so
are a rogue.
That is pretty cool because you're a rogue. Yes, exactly. Our Gaming with Rogues is going to be on February 18th next month. That will be the third Saturday. And because it's Valentine's Day month, we're doing Love Letter.
Aww.
Which is a really fun game about it's a pretty quick and simple game. It's just using cards and trying to guess what your opponent has and...
Right, the original game, which was so popular that there's like a dozen different expansion, sort of reskinned versions of it,
yep.
Has you trying to get your letter to the princess past everybody else, I guess.
Right.
But it's kind of an abstract game of cards and bluffs, I guess, and guesswork. I haven't played it. Still haven't played it.
You haven't played it?
Nope.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
It's really good.
I've played it. I've also played the Batman.
I just
Batman.
Think it's funny that something like Love Letter has been adaptable to Batman.
I've played the Batman version. I've played the Adventure Time version. I have not played the science... Actually, I think I have played one of the Lost Legacy or one of the science fiction versions.
I kind of want to play the Lord of the Rings one. Yeah.
The truth of the matter is they're all kind of similar.
Sure. But, you know, that we saw how that worked out for, say, the DC deck building game, which that Cerberus system was used for Street Fighter, Lord of the Rings, and a lot of other stuff, too.
Yep, Attack on Titan.
Naruto.
Yep. All right. So, sticking with games for a minute... There was an interesting game announcement. They're doing a Princess Bride RPG.
Yep.
And it's by the Fudge creator, Stefan O'Sullivan, using sort of the Fudge system, which is a sort of rules light. We've played a lot of stuff in our variant of Fudge.
Yep. I guess it's effectively my go-to system, although what I'm playing is also kind of close to Fate, which is the more popular derivation of Fudge. So... Anybody who's played the Fate system stuff, Spirit of the Century, a bunch of different Fate games that we sell with those plus and minus dice, knows some of the basics.
Yeah, it's going to be since it presents the world of the Princess Bride along with guidelines for running games with the film's uniquely lighthearted twist on the fantasy genre.
And then we're going to finally know the stats for what is it, the Shrieking Eels, Screaming Eels,
Shrieking Eels,
Shrieking Eels.
Or is the Screaming Eels? I think it's Screaming Eels.
Yeah,
I thought it was Shrieking Eels.
I want to know how difficult is it to climb the cliffs of insanity. I do love the Princess Bride. Most gamers play in a somewhat lighthearted mode, and I feel like it's probably a pretty perfect fit.
Yeah. Also, there's going to be a My Little Pony role playing game.
Yes.
Which we don't know much about. We just heard that's happening too.
Yep. You know, I've seen enough of the show to know that they have a fun little universe built up, and there's like their little town, and there's all sorts of threats and monsters. I believe it could be pretty good. Now, what I'm hoping is that they'll build it so that it's very all-ages approachable. It'd be nice to have a good intro game for kids.
Right.
I know there's going to be Adults Planet 2, but it'd be really cool if it was very kid-friendly.
Mature pony game.
You know what's interesting is that like video games and to some extent comics, TV, like licenses are generally not great.
Right.
Like licensed video games are notorious for being bad.
Mm-hmm.
Licensed RPGs, I think, have a pretty good track record.
It's true.
They have a track record that's good, but it also, like, the companies lose the license, like, instantaneously, it feels like.
Yeah, they...
Mongoose, and they had the Marvel one.
They're not long...
A year.
They're not long-running. It's true. There's been three or four different Marvel games, a bunch of different DC games. There's been the Buffy game that went out of print. Smallville.
Right. But to some degree, those games... I think didn't necessarily require lots of expansions.
No.
So it's like what they put out was kind of all that was needed.
Yeah.
But like right now, there's
Dresden,
Star Wars Dresden. What was the one that was on the tip of my tongue?
I don't know.
So the One Ring.
The
Lord of the Rings one, which they recently did a D20 version of.
Right.
Or yeah, D20. So there's definitely several out there at the moment.
What license do you believe should come to RPGs?
Yeah, they cover a lot of them.
Yeah.
They even, I think, that's right, because I know you picked it up, they did Supernatural.
Yeah, time. That's right.
That seems like one that should just stay in print. That I think that would have following.
I think it's time to expand beyond genre.
Yeah?
I think Parks and Rec role-playing game.
I want the new Hasbro universe in a role-playing game.
You know, that would make a lot of sense.
it would
make
fun.
More sense than anything in the new Hasbro universe.
Actually, here's what I would prefer to see would be... individual RPGs and one mixer RPG for them. So you would get a G.I. Joe RPG, a Transformers RPG,
yep.
A He-Man RPG.
How has there never been a G.I. Joe or Transformers RPG? That's crazy.
I think they probably don't see enough money in it to make it worthwhile to develop it.
But I want it, Dave.
Yeah, I know. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I was going to say Star Trek, but I believe a Star Trek one is already in the works. It's
actually on its way, yeah.
There's a new one coming very soon.
Looking forward to that. I'm thinking weirder. Oh, Fast and the Furious RPG. Tell me you wouldn't play that game.
It's basically an RPG already.
You would play that game.
Yep. I feel like it would something, you know, using something similar to the, what is it, Feng Shui system, which is always based on, like, for those who haven't played it, Feng Shui is based on, like, Hong Kong action cinema.
Yeah.
But it incorporates everything from ninjas to samurais to gun duelists and all this kind of stuff, wild gunplay. And one of the things you do is, you know, you kind of amp up your dice rolls for your moves by describing them in wild ways. Like, you know, I slide down the banister and vault off at the last second, you know, flipping through the air and firing and, you know, pinwheeling as I go. And you're going to get some bonus dice for describing it like that.
Yep.
And then you're going to be able to pull it off. I feel like something like that would fit the license for Fast and the Furious, crazy stunts.
I agree. I think that's a good call.
The train heist, Nick, at the beginning of Fast Five, I believe.
Yeah.
That feels like straight up ridiculous RPG sequence.
One of their sequences could be really described.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Oh, hey, here's one. Mission Impossible.
Oh, yeah, Mission Impossible would be a great RPG.
Yeah,
that's kind of when we played Spycraft.
I like Spycraft.
That is kind of what we did,
yeah.
but an official Mission Impossible.
Had a few little sort of archetypes or different characters you could play, rules for, you know, creating impossible situations and gadgets for overcoming them.
I feel like Valiant, with its expanding into television, needs to expand into the role-playing.
They have an RPG.
Do they have one?
They have an RPG and a deck-building game. And a,
on Free RPG the Day, they game. Had a little promo, I think, for it.
Yeah, they have an RPG.
I'd forgotten that they didn't have an RPG.
It was an interesting-sounding system.
You know, this is going to sound weird, because it started as a joke in my head.
Yeah.
But you know how La La Land just like won all the Oscar nominations?
Okay.
I think an improvisational music RPG for the right group of people could be a ton of fun.
That'd be a tough sell for people, bro.
But if you can combine sort of karaoke with RPG, you could have fun with that.
I agree. You'd have to have a bold group. It already takes people a little bit to put themselves out there enough to kind of get in character in an RPG.
Can you imagine though, if like singing it, if you use the song in a way, like you would use a Prince song for seduction roles or Rage Against the Machine for combat.
It'd be cool if they somehow had but those are just playing extant songs though.
Well, you can't necessarily make up songs on the fly. That's a different skill set.
That's what you're saying. That's what a musical is though. Those characters always in a musical, it's as if they make up songs on the fly.
Yeah, but I mean you'd have to go with like this would be like the Pitch Perfect kind of thing where you're redoing versions.
Well, that
of.
Would be interesting. You know what would be kind of cool is if there was a game where you would basically come with your phone loaded with all your favorite songs and stuff that you could access. And they had some gameplay effect. Spells are cast with, you know, pop music and stuff like that.
Phonogram the RPG.
Yeah. By the way, the one I feel like the obvious one here that I actually think would make a mint, would be awesome, could be all ages friendly, is Avatar The Last Airbender.
Oh my god, yeah. I don't know why there isn't one.
Yeah, I mean, how cool would it be to, you know, that you've got all the different nations and you've got super ghoul powers. You've got people who are not... I'm trying to think, like, Uncle Iroh in that. Did he actually have any powers? Was he a bender?
He was not a bender.
Uncle Iroh?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like...
He wasn't a bender.
He was a friend.
No, he wasn't.
No, I think he did, but I think he...
You're talking about Zuko's grandfather?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a superior firebender.
I didn't think he was a bender.
I just think that he was not real demonstrative of it throughout the season.
No,
because
like
he was mostly
super powerful, but he learned to control it and learned that the power was not like him. He basically used it well.
Okay, I thought he was mostly like a martial artist type dude.
Yeah, no, that's what I was thinking too. I was trying to recall basically if there were non-powered cool characters.
Don't you remember him redirecting the lightning that Zuko's sister...
Oh yeah, I
kind of
remember that now.
Him.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, it's a rich fantasy world.
Yes, it is. By the way, one more, and it's not a license so much, but I'm staring at it. If you did an RPG that was Pandemic, like the World of Pandemic, where you were... That'd be a fun RPG. You could have fun with that.
I have two.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of that is because we've been playing Pandemic Legacy,
which has an RPG element to it.
Just play the main game, you might not quite see it. But, you know, there are plot twists and turns a little bit Outbreak-ish.
Yeah.
You know, if you can imagine, you know, those emergency helicopter rides, you know, last-minute vaccines.
Yeah.
You know, the threats behind them and all that.
Yeah, I can see it.
But what? I have two that kind of go hand-in-hand, sort
yes.
of.
Okay.
Power Rangers? Why is that not a...
That is crazy there's not a Power Rangers RPG.
Yeah.
I think that would be a lot of fun. And then Pacific Rim.
Yeah, Pacific Rim would
Pacific
also be a ton of fun.
As an RPG would be a blast.
Yep. By the way, Bone could be a good RPG, too. You do a lot in that world.
I feel like that one might be a little tough.
It might be too specific.
Because it's particular brand of humor and stuff is, I think, hard for... You know, if it had pre-existing adventures that were, like, you know, springboarded, you know, with springboards by for concepts for them by Jeff Smith or something to kind of make sure they felt bony. But you can definitely do something with that.
I'm also a little weirded out, and I know this is deliberate, but they've never done a Magic the Gathering RPG.
Yeah, they've
or
done
even
little,
like a world into D&D or
they've
something.
Done little, no, they've done some D&D free downloads and stuff like that recently.
Have
the
they?
Last two sets.
Okay, all right.
The last two sets, I think, whatever their spooky one was.
Eldritch Moon?
No, before that, the one that sounds like Ravenloft but isn't.
Eldritch Moon.
Is that Eldritch Moon?
Yeah.
Oh, what's Eldritch Moon was all the...
What's the name of the location, maybe, or something there? I thought there was... I remember a different name.
I don't know.
Okay.
Return to Ravnica, or...?
No, maybe it'll come to me. But anyway, they did do those as free PDFs that you get. I think they had monsters, world ideas, stuff like that.
Oh, I didn't know
classes.
That.
That's kind of cool.
But yeah, it seems like a world right for it. I think the only thing is probably that Magic players, like... Or really, it's just flavor for them for a game that's largely abstract.
You think if they did like a World of Warcraft RPG, people would be interested?
You know, there was a Warcraft RPG.
Was there? Was
yeah.
it like back like when it originally came around?
It was early World of Warcraft days, I believe.
It's got very rich lore and stuff like that.
I was going to say, the lore is so
but
big.
I think one of the things there is you play the video game.
You play the video game, yeah.
Right. Now, when I was like playing EverQuest, which they did do an RPG for back in the day, what I liked about it was the role-playing side of it, which was really not that heavily supported by the gameplay itself.
Right.
But there were role-play servers, just like all of these ones have.
Sure.
And I would have liked to have played a pen and paper version of it, but I think most people would not.
Yeah, that's so. Probably. I mean, that's the problem with all this. You never know. Right. By the way, Dave, I know you'd be on board this. A Star Realms RPG. They've got novels.
Yep. Yep, and what I've read of the Star Realms novel is pretty fun. I have one more for you.
Yep.
Matrix.
Oh, yeah, the Matrix, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, there's all sorts of different ways, paths you could go with it. Unusual characters you could build, people who were born outside the Matrix, people who... anybody who's seen the Animatrix has seen some of that, a little bit of how they could build on those worlds.
I think, honestly, this kind of shows where the RPG market remains a little weak, even with D&D 5e doing well, that none of these games exist. I think it's just that it's a big risk to buy a big license and not have a game go.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'll throw out one more, too.
Yep, okay.
Even though the movie was kind of controversial, Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
I think a game based on like the classic Ghostbusters, but kind of with conceptual openings for whatever you want to do with it.
Well, you know there was a Ghostbusters RPG,
right? You've told me about it, and it sounded awesome.
It was great. I love the Ghostbusters RPG.
This was like this for folks who don't know. This is an RPG goes back to the era of the original, like in the 80s, mid or late 80s. And remind me, what was the role of the...
Louis Tully was the head of Ghostbusters International. He was, like, their accountant and their CEO.
Right.
And then
so, in other words, does that mean that, like... Because I feel like it'd be very fun to play him as the DM, kind of haphazardly... explaining the situation to the Ghostbusters.
He'd be the guy. He's the guy who walked. You guys were a franchise, and he'd walk you through the opening year franchise and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
What yeah.
You can do all kinds of fun stuff. Well, you're going to be part of the first franchise in Japan.
Yep.
And, we understand ghosts are a little bit different, so you're going to want to watch out. And
this is by West End Games, by the way. Same guys did the beloved Star Wars game back in the day. Yeah. So, and unfortunately, these are all out of print because licenses, like Nick said at the outset, They lose the rights, and then they can't print them, and nobody can print them.
I've heard so many good people talk about, like, the Ninja Turtles.
The Ninja Turtles game was fun. Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad. That is sort of the downside of licensed games. Like, and I've learned that lesson now. I wish I'd known in the 80s that if you have a licensed game, don't sell it. Don't get rid of it.
Yeah.
Because I had, at one point, the Ghostbusters game, the Turtles game, all the Marvel games. Like, I had all those games, and then I just got rid of them.
Do you still have the Marvel ones?
No, I don't.
I've got all the Turtles stuff. Mm-hmm. I will say I have zero love for the system for Palladium.
Yeah.
But it's but the Turtles, like, conceptually, I thought it was pretty ingenious. Instead of just making the game built around the Turtles and the Shredder and all their enemies and stuff.
Yeah.
Basically, the idea was, like, the ooze or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think they actually had different ways you could get powers in it. But you could either pick or roll on a table that had, like, 100 different animals.
Yeah.
And the idea was just various mutated animals that you could be, like, extremely mutated, like the turtles were, where they were basically like humans with little turtle faces.
Right.
Or you could be somewhere in between, you know, like somebody who, instead of arms, had like bird wings and stuff.
Right.
And they had a rich world that also would go on to encompass time travel out of the Ninja Turtle time travel stuff. An apocalyptic Road Warrior-esque future that had, like, basically Car Wars-style battles between their vehicles.
Yep.
Space stuff with Triceratons. Yep. So it was all for sure the world of the Ninja Turtles, but you could go wildly off in your own direction and build all kinds of cool creatures.
Yep.
In fact, I'm sorry, go ahead, Ben.
No, I said, I was just going to make a comment. I love rolling on tables. That was one of the coolest things.
So their sample, I always remembered, was kind of a fun one. A guy, they roll on the table, and the dude gets something like, a sparrow. And he's like, oh, man. He's like, you know, and then their sample of rolling up the characters has the actual dialogue, and the guy is initially, you know, like, oh, man, this sucks. Maybe we should re-roll. And they're like, well, let's see what we can do with it.
Yeah.
And so he makes this this tough team of heroes called, like, the Sparrowhawks or something like that. And they're almost like these, like, punk rock, sword-wielding, tough sparrows that, you know, look like the warriors as birdmen and stuff. And so, you know, it invited you to take the absurd, which, if you think about it, Ninja Turtles, very absurd.
Very absurd.
And make it cool.
By the way, we should clarify. When Nick says rolling on tables, he means rolling dice on tables and roll in rule books, not rolling on a table back and forth.
Like a log.
I mean, that's fun, too.
That's also fun.
It's not being ruled out.
Not being ruled out.
But I'm talking about rolling on, you know, like...
yes. The random treasure tables of D&D, all those things.
I remember rolling up my Warhammer Fantasy character.
Yeah. Yeah, really Warhammer enjoyed. Was fun because it had such weird possibilities and dark and entertainingly weird stuff.
All right, diverting over from RPG stuff, Star Wars 8 has a title now.
Yeah.
Star Wars The Last Jedi.
I think it's a pretty badass name.
It's a good name. And the question is, what does it mean?
Right.
People are like, does this mean Luke's going to die? Does this mean, is Jedi plural? And Jedi is plural. There is not a, you don't say Jedis.
Right. So it could be like the Last Jedi Order, effectively.
Yes, it could be.
Like that. And it doesn't mean necessarily that they would be, I think, the truly the final ones. That may just be somebody's pronouncement of it. It's like, this is our chance. If we wipe them out, then, you know, we've killed all these people, and he is the last Jedi, or Rey is the last Jedi.
Well,
or whatever.
In the crawl for Force Awakens, Luke Skywalker is referred to as the Last Jedi.
Okay. Yeah, I think that probably means it's just going to zero in on him, among other things.
Since he had no lines in the last one.
Yeah. That's not true. He sang a whole song.
That's true.
Oh, that was just the internet.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
You remember the All By Myself thing?
Yes.
Yeah. That's creepy, by the way. Those little lips moving. It's weird.
Yeah. But I think it sounds cool.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to whatever they do. I'm not going to speculate hard and try and figure it out because I just want them to do something cool.
The internet's doing that for you.
Yep.
They can do that off in their little pockets.
I agree. By the way, you guys remember when I was done with Star Wars a couple years ago?
I do. You're like, no more Star Wars. Marvel Star Wars comics are going to be El Stinko.
Yep.
I won't go see the movie.
Yep.
I do think that as we get to the – we're into the once-a-year movie model for them that – I may get sort of worn out, and you know there might start being those ones where like, yeah, you know, I'm not really feeling the trailers for this Greedo movie, so I'm going to skip this one. On the other hand, you could probably do something with a Greedo movie.
You know, I'd say that's crazy, but you're the guy who skipped Ant-Man until it came out of theater. So,
yes,
I believe that it's going to be exactly like Marvel Cinematic for me, which is that I'll be there for opening weekend for all these movies.
Yeah. I just don't want them to stink like Rogue One did.
Oh. I think the more I think about Rogue One, the more I want to rewatch it, actually.
Yeah.
Of course, I saw it a second time and liked it better, so.
Yeah. Been having trouble sleeping, I guess.
So, we also got our first look at DC's Teen Titans The Judas Contract animated movie.
Oh.
I guess this was maybe on the trailer for Justice League Dark.
Yeah. I actually haven't watched this.
Me neither.
I forgot where that was. That was the one, by the way, Randy, we were talking right before the podcast. I felt like there was something I was going to watch. That was it.
I don't think the trailer's out.
Oh, okay. Maybe they're just talking about it.
Yeah, they're just talking about it. Anyway.
But it's finally happening after so long.
This was the story in the comics that introduced Deathstroke.
Yep.
Here's the weird thing. Cyborg won't be in it because he's in Justice League now.
Uh-huh.
And he was sort of a crucial member of the Teen Titans at this point.
He was at that point, but he's not super crucial to this story.
And Raven may not be in it either.
Huh.
However, Blue Beetle will be.
You know, it's honestly mainly a Nightwing story with Jericho and Deathstroke and...
I don't see Jericho.
And Terra, yeah. So, what's that?
I don't see Jericho.
Huh, weird. I'm not quite sure how they'll do it without him, but I mean, for sure it could be done.
Well, here's the thing. Almost all of these movies have been disappointing.
to us, I have heard people who loved Killing Joke...
Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, Dark Knight Returns. You like Dark Knight Returns, right, Randy?
Dark Knight Returns is not bad.
Yeah.
I think they've all been sort of varying degrees for me. Top is like the Red Hood one, and then they kind of go down.
I don't like tend to watch a lot of animated adaptations and stuff. When I was a kid, or even up in my 20s and stuff, I would have been like way all over these. But I think I've become pretty happy with I'm like. The original kind of can't be beat for me.
Here's my thing. I wish they'd stop doing adaptations.
Really?
Just do new stories.
I think this is a good idea.
I agree.
Really?
I don't think the Red Hood
one, which is your favorite, is
it's an adaptation, but it's like a loose adaptation.
Right, and this is going to be one, too.
Yeah. I just like to see some new stories.
But since the movies aren't going to cover these, and, you know, the Judas Contract was to the Teen Titans comic what Dark Phoenix was to X-Men.
Yes, absolutely.
It's almost like you can't not adapt that.
I think I like the adaptations. I think the thing that I would argue for Nick's point, which I'm not sure I agree with, but is that the best anime they've done have been original stories. The Green Arrow short and the Spectre short. I would argue they should do shorts. Not do these two-hour movies, but do, like, an anthology where there's three movies. Now, I think they lost their shirt on that one. I think it did not do well.
The Suicide Squad one that had them like
into Arkham or whatever.
Into Arkham. That was a new story.
Yeah, I didn't like that one.
But I liked that more than I've liked some of the adaptations.
And I do agree with some of your general point, Nick, that they should do more of the new ones. When I think about what was it? They adapted like the first Justice League New 52 storyline, which was kind of not in and of itself a great, like, it's not one of those ones where it was like, you know, the Avengers Mansion Siege?
Yeah.
That's one that I feel like should probably be adapted somewhere, and maybe even has in one of the Avengers shows, which is a good place to kind of, you know, the Batman animated series did some amazing adaptations.
One of the cartoons.
Did they do their Earth's Heroes? They might have.
I thought they did an Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and I thought they did it really well.
And I think you can play it kind of fast and loose, use some newer characters with it, the same way, like, I guess Gambit was in the Dark Phoenix saga and stuff in the 90s cartoons. But, as a general rule, I don't think they should be doing all adaptations. I think a few of these big stories, like Judas Contract, that makes sense to me. Dark Knight makes sense. But I would like to probably see some more new stuff.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like the giant kaiju one.
Yeah.
We never got around to that one.
Nope.
It was a fun idea.
I don't think anybody
put it on Netflix. I might watch.
We should. It was an idea in the podcast.
I heard bad things.
Yeah. Well,
All right. Shane Black's The Predator, which is his reboot. I think he's directing and maybe writing.
Yeah, he is writing and directing.
So it originally was going to star Benicio del Toro. Now they've put in Boyd Holbrook from Narcos.
Right.
And the supporting cast includes Olivia Munn, Keegan-Michael Key, Trevante Rhodes from Moonlight, and Sterling K. Brown from Series of Unfortunate Events.
That's a pretty good pedigree of people.
Well, now they're reporting that Thomas Jane is in talks to join. The thing is, Thomas Jane is killing it on The Expanse.
I think all these people may have jumped at the chance to work with Shane Black.
Yeah.
Keegan-Michael Key. Is he one of these guys who's kind of too recognizable as a comedic presence to kind of sink into a dramatic role? Has he done dramatic roles?
I'm trying to think if he's done a purely dramatic. He has been on shows where it's been a dramatic show. Fargo.
Yeah.
He's got some chops.
I feel like he could be distracting, but if I think about this, this is a remake of Predator, the Arnold Predator, right? That movie is made up of a bunch of ridiculous action hero types and Shane Black himself. Although he didn't write the original, right? He was just in it. Yeah.
Oddly enough. I don't know. Shane Black hasn't made a movie I don't like, I don't think.
I don't feel like you need to revisit Predator because it's Shane Black, I have more interest in it.
Same here. Shane Black teamed with Rennie Harlan to make a fun movie. Uh-huh. Nobody makes a good movie with Rennie Harlan.
Uh-huh. What was the movie that they teamed with?
Long Kiss Goodnight.
Yeah, Long Kiss Goodnight.
Oh, Shane Black wrote that
Shane
one.
Black wrote that one. Shane Black has sort of a magic touch for me, so I am looking forward to what he does
magic
here.
Magic Predator touch?
Yes, Magic Predator touch. yes, exactly.
Suggested a title
yes.
for...
All right. Cloak and Dagger, the TV series coming on Hulu, has got a director for its pilot.
Right.
Actually, I'm sorry. It's not Hulu. I keep thinking it's Hulu.
No, it's Freeform. Which is what...
What crap is that?
It's what ABC Family...
It was ABC Family, yeah.
And it's actually a fairly notable director, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is Gina Prince-Bythewood, which looks like Gina Prince-by-the-Wood, by the way, on Twitter. But it's apparently her real name. She has directed Felicity and Different World, but she also directed them films Love and Basketball and Beyond the Lights.
Which I know Love and Basketball. That was the one with Leonardo DiCaprio.
That was the Basketball Diaries.
Yes, that's Basketball Diaries.
Love and Basketball was...
I saw that these were described as, like, acclaimed. Are they, like, sort of indie movies?
I think they're sort of indie movies, yes.
I mean, that's an interesting pedigree to go to something like this. Yeah. I kind of like it.
Especially for, like, Freeform, for ABC Family. It's definitely... Seems like they means they're going for something.
I think we all like Cloak and Dagger, right?
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Likes them, maybe acknowledges that they're not in a ton of great stories, but they've been in some good ones, and they kind of always seem interesting when they show up. Two runaway kids with weird powers that are linked to each other, so that they literally will probably like die off if they can't use their powers to keep each other alive. There's just all kinds of interesting things in there. They're often kind of homeless.
Yep.
There's a racial thing because traditionally she's white, he's black.
Usually the stories they were telling were kind of dark, tinged with like
there was some kind of gritty stuff in there. I mean, it was in a weird way, it was kind of allowed Marvel to tell street level stories and talk about drug problems in the 80s and stuff like that. But usually like. You know, like, there's a demon who's... They're using his essence in drugs, and he's infecting people with his presence, and, you know, larger-than-life stuff. I hope they're still going to do that they don't pad it too much.
Me too.
Or soften it.
They also have great visuals, so I'll be curious to see how they do that.
They look... those characters are awesome, and the way they, like, teleport is awesome. The way his cloak looks is awesome.
Yep.
So, fingers crossed. Were they created by Bill Mantlo?
It was a Mantlo creation. I can remember the art.
You know, Mantlo is still a sad case to me. You know, he's still in sort of a semi-vegetative state in a hospital, but he created Rocket Raccoon, Cloak and Dagger. He conceptualized ROM and the Micronauts. So many things that people have fond memories for from the 80s.
Yeah, Mantlo was definitely one of those guys that created a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They have cast their music meister for the Flash Supergirl crossover episode.
I saw
that. Darren Criss from Glee, which, by the way, it's going to be a Glee reunion because Benoist and
Cisco
Grant Gustin are both Glee alums, so kind of fun.
It sounds a lot of fun.
It would have been cool if they could have gotten Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, He's off doing Series of Unfortunate Events.
Yes, yes. He's too big for Flash now.
Yeah. For those who don't know, the Music Meister character debuted on Brave and the Bold.
Yep. Yes.
And was from an awesomely ridiculous musical episode, yep. Which he... did he make everybody around him sing as if they
yes.
were in a musical?
Yes.
And yes, Neil Patrick Harris did a stunningly great job with him. Find it however you can and
yep.
watch it. If the Music Meister, his own theme song, does not get stuck in your head, then you are a better man than I am.
Finally, this is a bit of comic news. There is a Batman Shadow miniseries coming in April, which is notable in particular because the creative team is
great.
It's like DC's heavy hitters. It's Scott Snyder and Steve Orlando and Raleigh Rossmo.
Yeah, the art that you know came with this announcement was pretty amazing, especially on the Shadow front.
You know what's weird? I thought it looked good, but it wasn't quite what I wanted.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you not like Riley Rossmo? I can't remember.
Since the name does not immediately call to mind the artist.
Well, he
visuals.
Was doing the Hellblazer.
You did like Riley Rossmo on Hellblazer, actually.
When he was doing it.
Yep.
Is that the dude who went way back when did...
He did the Constantine stuff.
He did Proof. With
Proof, what I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
Okay, I do like him, but I will say, I don't know if Batman Shadow is what I would put him on, but I do like him.
Are you saying that you had in your head what you wanted Batman Shadow to look like?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it'd be like Gene Colan or one of those kind of inky artists like that with not Kelly Jones, but somebody like Kelly Jones who draws those big, like, long sweeping capes and stuff like
put
that.
In the hood.
Oh, Kyle Hotz.
Kyle Hotz.
Yeah, he was like Kelly Jones 2.0.
Yeah.
Honestly, I would want to revive Gene Colan for it.
I don't think you can do that.
Oh, okay. Well, somebody like him then.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting. He's an. He is a. There's the artist who draws Rick Remender's. Is it Black Science? I forget which one of the
Drama
books he's doing.
Pina?
No, not that one. There's an artist who I could see the influence of Gene Colan on, and he was the only artist I've like really ever seen serious influence on because he was such a weird and unique artist. He kind of mixed photorealism and that Kirby dynamism, and Neil Adams dynamism.
Huh.
I'm blanking on who it is. It's the guy who did the Thor when he was a kid stuff, I think, too, Once Upon a Time, the young Asgardian.
Huh, okay.
Just had a sort of a bit of that flair. Anyway.
So I forgot...
Yeah.
That there were two trailers this week. I thought we'd already talked about this because we've been talking about it online, all this kind of stuff. But we apparently have not talked about this.
Not for the podcast officially.
For the podcast
formally.
Officially. So first let's talk about the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers trailer.
Yeah.
Which
this
I have
is
not
like
watched.
Sort of third, maybe
this is
final
its
trailer.
I think it's its final trailer.
Second and final, I think, right?
Yeah, I think it's second and final. They have the teaser, then they have kind of a larger one, and then this is the
I hear there are Zords in it.
Yeah, they
this
actually
one sort of revealed all... Who's their little alien UFO pal?
Alpha 5, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
It had him in it.
Okay.
Which is kind of... It's like weirder looking.
It actually showed Bryan Cranston a Zordon.
Yep. I watched
it. So weird.
I don't remember a lot about it, other than
the thing about it, this trailer that got me is that it felt very much in line with some of the cartoon.
Didn't they
elements.
Say it's Morphin time?
It does. They did say it's Morphin time.
And didn't
time.
They morph?
They morphed.
And they fought.
They fought. They had Zords.
They came. They morphed. They.
I felt
they
like
kicked their ass.
I felt like their Zords had a lot of Michael Bay Transformers influence.
Right.
On
that
them,
kind of slightly busy.
Which. I
Hollywood,
wish people would step away from.
Yeah.
But I thought some of the designs looked interesting. Mm-hmm.
In general, what I noticed among people on my Facebook page was that... and I did see a few people who were like, this looks like crap. And most of them are kind of like, can't imagine it diverting from the kind of campiness of the show.
Right.
But even among some of those devotees to the show from the 90s, a lot of them were like, you know what? It's looking kind of cool.
Yeah, with each trailer, it looks like it's getting a little bit better. So, at this point, I might go see a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie in theaters. There is a possibility.
I would have to hear from somebody else because I don't have a strong connection to the property. In fact, I have no connection to the property. But the vibe I got on the earliest trailers and a little bit on some of these is sort of reminded me of Raimi's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And although people might quibble over his interpretation of Spider-Man, I think that the overall movie has some good energy. It's a good tone, I think. That kind of, you know, light, but some, you know, the Green Goblin is a credible villain.
Yeah.
There's some good character moments in it. I could potentially see it. It's not going
to
be super likely, but it's potential.
I'm trying to remind myself, who's directing this? Was it somebody like?
I have no idea.
I don't think it's anybody super well known.
It's not.
My interest in the Power Rangers is best summed up as I don't know how to sum it up. I have no interest.
No Power Rangers.
It's not that I dislike it. I just don't care.
Right.
This
is not morphing time for.
This is not morphing time.
So this is the guy who did Project Almanac.
I don't know what that is.
It was a that was about a group of kids who create time travel. It was a solid movie, not amazing, but it was solid.
Was that an all-ages movie, or...?
I mean, it was a PG-13.
Like, I guess, was it Hunger Games-ish? Or was it for the youth?
That's for the youth, I guess.
Okay.
But, you know, it was fun. I can definitely see that brought to this trailer, so it's not a huge surprise.
The other trailer was the Red Band trailer for X-23.
With two F-bombs in it.
Yes, it is actually Logan, but it's X-23.
Right.
Stealthed her in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much... Here's the thing.
She had been in the previous trailers, but kind of just in the background.
Yeah, well, and they really give her a spotlight here. And the girl who's playing her looks like she's going to play her well. Yeah. She's got that sort of menace down. It's interesting. The thing is, I really have come to like Laura as all-new Wolverine.
Yeah.
I was never a big X-23 fan. And I haven't liked either of the standalone Wolverine movies. The Wolverine is watchable, at least. The Origins was a crime against humanity. But
it's true.
I'm not as hyped for this as everybody else is. I think it's partly because I have a lack of faith in Fox to pull it off. But also, weirdly, despite the fact that I don't like the Old Man Logan story, the things I did like about it, sort of post-apocalyptic and all that kind of stuff, seems to be sort of out the window. They go to a convenience store. Like, this is clearly not a post-apocalyptic kind of thing.
I think it's more like Interstellar's post-apocalypse. Like, society is going on and there's pockets of it, probably. It's probably meant to kind of be like the equivalent of a futuristic Old West.
Yeah, I would say like the Interstellar future or the Looper future, sort of where things are not great.
But those are dystopian, not post-apocalyptic. I want post-apocalypse. I want Road Warrior.
I mean, I feel like this could be, like, you can have like a post-apocalyptic Old Western and it would probably look like this. There'd just be the convenience stores that were still like there.
I don't know, man. That convenience store looked pretty fully stocked.
No, you're right. You're right. It wasn't like Fallout.
It was in Texas, too.
Yeah, it's not like Fallout. He wasn't like changing bottle caps for the one bottle of cola he had. This was fully stocked.
They've been kind of coy about that. There's at like no point in any of these trailers have I seen him say something like, you know, in the year 2018, you know, apocalypse struck.
But I know online there is like the director talking about the future. I've seen that article. I didn't click on it because more than not, I'm going to go see this.
Yeah.
I know.
See, Xavier's supposed to be like 90 in it.
Yeah.
I believe. Yeah. So really? Patrick Stewart's like in his 70s, so for a change, they're just aging him up a little bit.
No, Dave. He's fucking 90.
yeah, that's right. That's right. That's the.
That's one of the F-bombs. Comes from Patrick Stewart, which is great.
Yeah, it is. It is something to see him dropping it. Not that he hasn't on various TV shows.
Right.
Completely foul mouthed and awesome. But yeah, the girl looks awesome. There's cool. It's another, as I recall, another some good musical cues in there. You know what's the weird thing for me? What's that?
It's gonna be R. I mean, it's gonna be R-rated. X-23 comes out carrying a dude's head.
Yep.
You know what? I don't think I noticed that.
Did you not?
I watched it on my phone or something.
Yeah, when
they
send the guy in to get her, she comes out carrying his head.
Yep. No, I remember she comes out, but I thought it was sort of like just supposed to be like, oh my god, they send in an assassin and she just walked out.
This is one of the people, or the main person after them, one of the Reavers, isn't it?
Reaver is named. Donald Pierce is who. Holbrook is playing Donald Pierce.
It was pointed out to me that some of these guys showed like signs of cybernetic enhancement.
Yeah,
but the vibe I got was to me they just looked like how do you say that militia dude Cliven Bundy and his sons.
I think I
was not feeling their threat strongly.
I think they're going a Donald Pierce and the Reavers, but for the movies. And this is one of my issues with the X-Men movies. They've always seemed somewhat embarrassed by their superhero leanings, whereas Marvel Cinematic steers into it. And I want more pure suit. Like, you're doing cyborgs versus mutants. Just steer into it.
Yep. You know, it'd be cool, Randy, if they ran with the full post-apocalypse and you saw them doing that kind of cross-country road trip, which we know at least they're doing part of.
Mm-hmm.
If there were, like, these dusty remains of Sentinel Hulks across the landscape, you know?
You know what would also be cool?
Yeah.
If they did the Tank Tread Reaver dude. What's that guy's name, Nick? I figured he'd know it. I knew you'd hate it, but I figured he would know it.
Well, I have to say, just as villains go,
yeah.
I remember in the X-Men, the Reavers were one of the scariest.
The Reavers were great bad guys.
They were horrifying.
They're no Marauders, but they were good bad guys.
To me, they were. I don't actually remember the Reavers much.
These people, it was Australia. It was post your time.
Yeah, these are people like led by Lady Deathstrike at times. And
Donald Pierce created the Reavers in the comics, though.
Yeah.
It is interesting how lineages passed down. Donald Pierce was
Hellfire
Club, no powers.
Right. But then Wolverine chopped him up, and he had to get
he became a cyborg, like some of the guards he beat up.
Yep.
And Pierce rallied them, I guess, into the Reavers.
Yep.
By the way, Randy, if they did Tank Body Guy,
yep.
Then you could have an awesome car chase with them being chased by Tank Body Guy.
Yeah, now you're on board.
Weren't the Reavers the person who basically crucified Wolverine?
Yeah, that's the Reavers.
Yeah.
The Reavers are cool.
I'm hopeful for this movie.
I think it's probably going to be pretty well done. Because
after the way Dave reported the last X-Men movie...
Yeah, I haven't seen Apocalypse yet.
I have, passed that up to buy for $5 and to rent for $2.
I've known at least one or two people who have seen it after hearing my my pain description and have liked it, I think. Yep. They're like, oh, it was actually okay. So Nick, I think it's time for you to give it a shot and see if you like it.
It's got to be coming on HBO soon, right?
Probably.
Our stars.
Can't be worse than Suicide Squad.
Hey, now. I like Suicide Squad.
I finally watched Suicide Squad. And we're going to talk about comics now.
Yes.
We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, January 25th. And I'm going to start. This is interesting because this is not a small week.
Yep.
And in fact, there were five books that were some of my best of 2016.
Yep.
And yet, as I went through, I was like, there were several books that sort of fallen. They were not quite on my picks list. Like, I liked a lot of books this week.
Uh-huh.
But the ones that sort of rose to the top are sort of unusual.
Okay.
And I think that may be the case for all of us.
I definitely have at least one unusual pick, which is my same old.
Yeah, well, you got a couple of same olds. But my pick is Divinity 3, Stalinverse number 2, which I can't remember if I picked number 1 of this or not. It was a
backup pick.
I think it was a backup pick, yeah.
Divinity 3 is the... Is that its own book? Stalinverse is the name of the crossover?
Yes, it is its own book. This is the third Divinity miniseries. It's kind of weird because Divinity, the central concept of this is a Valiant book, is this is sort of their Solar character. It's a Russian cosmonaut who went off into space, sort of some sort of experimental fashion light drive, and came back with sort of godlike powers and a godlike perspective. The first Divinity is about him, and the second one is about his fellow cosmonaut who was abandoned in space, and then she comes back with powers and is kind of pissed off about it, and the two of them have a conflict, and it's... Like I say, Solar, Superman kind of thing. Well, Divinity 3, the sort of pissed off cosmonaut, has used her cosmic powers to reshape reality so that Stalin and the USSR won World War II. And now in the modern day, basically Stalin rules over this Soviet world. And
this is an accurate description of our future, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Just checking.
So this is a this issue is all about... Ninjak, the super spy who is Colin King, is high placed in the Politburo, but is actually remembers what our universe is supposed to be for some reason. So he knows that this is not what it's supposed to be like, and he's sort of secretly working against them. He's working in the resistance and trying to get the real Divinity to step up and use his powers to change the world back.
Interesting.
This issue sees him in his ninja gear going up against Comrade Bloodshot,
uh-huh.
who in this universe is a bald, bearded man with an axe, very Stalin-esque.
Yep. He actually looks like, with the cloak and stuff, like sometimes how they image Rasputin.
Rasputin, that's what I was looking for, yeah. And so there's a great throwdown. There's some question of what's going on with the people running things. And... There's the underground is sort of being engaged by Divinity herself, Divinity 2, I guess. It's a really interesting... I love sort of Days Future Past, alternate worlds kind of thing.
Also, although I'm more than a little bit scared of Russia right at the moment, I do like those kind of alternate futures that weave in, like, you know, a controlling Russian Empire or something like that. I kind of like, you know, they have there's lots of interesting visual imagery and, you know, all these different revolutionary eras or the era of the czars and stuff to draw on that are kind of, they always kind of inform things interestingly.
Yep. And the whole thing starts with a timeline in the first page of 1922 to 2016 that shows how it all came to be. And the art by Trevor Harrison is really nice. So
Trevor Harrison's always been good.
Definitely worth a look, even if you're not usually a Valiant guy. Although, if you are a Valiant guy, the looks of, say, Shadow Man and Exo and Bloodshot in this world are going to be kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Dave, what's your pick?
My pick is a little unusual. I have not picked Extraordinary X-Men for some time. Maybe some of the early issues. But as a reminder, Jeff Lemire still writing this series. Jeff Lemire, whose work I often really like, but a little hit and miss on X-Men. This is Storm's team, by the way. And in Extraordinary X-Men 18, I decided to pick this issue up and read it because it looked like it was a standalone issue focusing on Forge, who was a new character introduced in the mid-80s that I really liked at the time, who was a romantic interest for Storm.
Mm-hmm.
Had an interesting mutant power to kind of conceptualize and super high-tech engineer stuff.
Yep.
He was slightly older, I guess, at the time.
Yep. And he invented the mutant neutralizer that Gyrick uses to use to take Storm's powers away.
And he was kind of a little bit... He was former military because he'd been in Vietnam, yep. And I'm sure they just timelined that forward.
He's also Native American.
Right. So he had a lot of interesting qualities. And his wartime experiences meant that he tended to be... He was a guy who would kill.
Yeah.
At times.
Yeah.
He had a little bit closer to like a Wolverine philosophy, but he wasn't by any means a berserker like Wolverine. He just would if you had to.
You know, it's funny. I think all three of us have a fondness for Forge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We all like this character. Where's our Forge ongoing series?
He was always a much more, like, he was a interesting and love interest for Storm that developed slowly, as opposed to, you know, I always look at, like, the Black Panther thing that was sort of foisted upon her.
Yeah.
And this was a more natural outgrowth.
Didn't he have a fight with Mystique for a little while?
He did, yeah.
Right.
During
that kind of fits.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, Solo and Slapstick and Fool Killer all got their series. When's Forge get his day in the sun?
You know, as much as I like Forge, I don't necessarily think he's a guy who should be running a solo book.
Dave, don't step on my dreams.
If I was going to do it, I'd say Jeff Lemire has proved in this issue he'd be a good guy for it. Because he clearly probably came from our era. And has a lot of love, too. And when the issue begins, this is a crossover within Humans versus X-Men, but I haven't been keeping close tabs on that, and I will say you don't need to. All you need to know is that they're, like, in order to stop the Terrigen Mist that's killing off all the mutants, they're prepping for this big assault against the Inhumans, and Forge is building this high-tech sort of machine to help them out with it. It's, like, it's vital to their plan. And when the story begins... He's kind of feeling a little bit underappreciated. He's like, my power is all occurs inside my head. And they do this kind of cool thing where he's looking at the machine, and it's as if he visualizes it kind of all, you know, like you would in a 3D model blown apart and all its components fitting together and stuff like that. And he's like, you know, my power is not showy, and as a result, people don't always kind of appreciate it. And so he's a little feeling sorry for himself, and he also kind of has been trying to... talk with Storm about their relationship. And, you know, it's been years since they've been in a relationship, but there's still some lingering something there. And she's kind of like, are you really going to try and talk to me right before we go to war, basically?
Right.
And he's like, yeah, all right, okay. And the body of the issue comes when they have to fly there, and Old Man Logan and Forge basically grab one of the X-Jets, or the X-Jet, I don't know, and they're delivering the tech. And so most of the issue is them talking, and there's clearly some tension, and I'm not quite sure why. Maybe it's just because they've both had sort of romantic interest in Storm over the years,
yeah.
I think. But also, what's interesting is that Forge talks to Old Man Logan, and he's asking him, he's like, I know in the future that you had to kill a lot of the X-Men, and he asks him, did you kill me?
Mm-hmm.
And Wolverine says, no, I didn't. He's like, but I think I heard about what might have happened to you. And the issue flashes forward and shows what might, with the artist, by the way, from the Old Man Logan ongoing comics,
yeah.
Sorrentino?
That guy must, you know, they did that in Civil War, too. That, they may be, like, trying to make that guy the guy who draws all the Old Man Logan sequences.
Yeah. Yeah, that would sort of make sense. There's definitely a Road Warrior riff.
Oh my
here.
God, that is a straight up Road Warrior
yeah,
Fury Road.
Glimpsing the Rhino as one of the sort of big leaders. You know, you see him in this giant rig here with his gang behind him of Marauders. And there's a sequence that Old Man Logan recounts that has Forge in it. And I don't want to say what happens, but it's a pretty interesting and cool, you know, possible thing that would happen in Forge's future. Possible ending to him, possibly not. You would have to read. They have a kind of an uneasy bromance / kind of edginess between them. And there is some follow-up stuff with Storm near the end, which, you know, so related a little bit to some of the relationship stuff. And it is a completely standalone issue, even though it's part of this big going-to-war thing. So anybody could walk in on this issue. You don't need to know anything about it other than that it's a Forge Spotlight issue, and it's a very good one. I like the art from, I guess, the series regular artist, Victor Ibanez. Did he do some of the Storm stuff?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So I liked his stuff. I'm not as big on Sorrentino, but it's not like a huge problem. It's just the flash forwards. I kind of wish I wish Ibanez had drawn all of them.
Right.
Anyway, Forge special this week in Extraordinary X-Men 18. Read it,
Nick.
I picked Skyborn number 3. I think I picked all the issues.
You have picked all issues of this, yep.
I was going to ask if that was Image, but I see it as Boom.
It is Boom. It is Frank Cho doing his sort of Arthurian,
modern day
Arthurian legend. Merlin has come back to wrought evil upon humanity because he no longer believes in humanity.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
I get that.
Yeah, and with him he brings hordes of dragons. And
I get that.
The shit hits the fan. There's no other way around that. And it's kind of cool. I like
the notion. Our lead.
The lead is one of the kids of Lazarus.
Okay.
And he's sort of like...
Well, you can't mix the Bible and King Arthur, except in the mythical, Bible-y parts of it.
That's what makes it unique.
Okay.
And, I don't know, I just like the sort of action-adventure book that Frank Cho has done. He both writes and draws this.
It's got a slightly R-rated edge to it, right? The violence looks somewhat violent at times.
I mean, yeah, it shows the dragons, like, ripping people apart. It's kind of nasty, but... Frank Cho draws kind of dragons, dinosaurs, all those things very well.
How does this guy possibly take on dragons? What is the son of Lazarus' powers?
He's basically like, he can't die. Uh-huh. He's super strong.
Okay.
Super athletic. But he's also sort of been out of the game for hundreds of years. He kind of gave up once his wife was killed.
Uh-huh.
So he has not been... actually active for quite some time, so he's got that sort of James Bond Skyfall.
Like, I actually ran into a dragon the other week, and I was like, I'm not up for this.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 years ago?
No. But there's some cool twists in here, but I'm really enjoying all the characters and the story, and I want to know more about this sort of organization that he works for, just because I think it's a fun concept.
Is it an ongoing series, Nick, or a mini?
No, this is... I mean, it says 3 of 5. This is the third issue of 5.
Okay.
So, hopefully, maybe it will adapt the kind of series of miniseries, like BPRD. I guess that just depends on sales, so...
Right.
No, I really, really enjoyed it.
And what's your backup pick?
My backup pick sort of fits in with Dave's original pick.
Yep.
Because they were flying... Forge and Old Man Logan were flying somewhere to deliver a machine.
Yep.
In Humans versus X-Men number 3, they deliver the machine.
Oh, yeah.
And encounter a few new Inhumans.
Okay.
Oh, it's one of those delivery comics.
Yes. So the...
that old chestnut.
The first two issues of Inhumans versus X-Men were very much X-Men heavy, and the X-Men kicking the Inhumans' butt, pretty much.
This all sounds good.
The third issue is kind of cool, because it's the young Inhumans, the ones who the X-Men didn't sort of deemed to be powerful enough to, to stand a chance.
It was not Black Bolt and Gorgon and Medusa.
Sort of
and
banding
those.
Together. And the sort of unifying person of this is, I'm not going to spoil who it is, but it's a great character, and the way that they get everybody involved feels very cool, and sort of, this is them taking taking things back a little bit.
Is it Triton?
Is it Lockjaw?
No. Lockjaw's been taken out.
Whoa.
Lockjaw
actually, that happened,
out.
I remember, in the first issue. And I remember specifically they did it sort of non-violently, because if anybody were to hurt Lockjaw, they would be an unforgiven forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, just think of any of the best of the new Inhumans that sort of...
I don't know who any of the new Inhumans are.
You know this one, because...
Miss Marvel? there's one Inhuman I can name, and that's it.
And there's also some cool Karnak stuff in here.
Okay,
being trapped by young Jean Grey, which is interesting.
Is there a test to see whether he can find a weak spot in her telekinetic
there
powers?
Might be something like that.
I always like that sort of stuff.
There's just a lot of infighting a little bit too with the X-Men, sort of old Hank McCoy or Beast fighting with his younger self, uh-huh, sort of over things. I just love all the kind of moral quandaries and some of the fun action as two relatively young Inhumans fight Forge and Old Man Logan. So,
Well, I know whose side I'm on. I just read a comic with him and I really liked it. Yeah. And I don't know the new Inhumans, so I hope Forge and Old Man Logan killed them.
Sure, side against Ms. Marvel, Dave.
And I hope they killed Lockjaw too.
You have to remember, Human Torch is part of the Inhumans now too. He's trapped them there.
He's not.
Unless you get your powers from the Terrigen Mist, you're not allowed to be an Inhuman.
That's true.
Well, unless you're dating Medusa.
No, that's not how it works. If I date Medusa, it doesn't make me an Inhuman.
Actually, it does.
You have to fall on the Inhuman side.
I guess you have to be on their side, but you're not Inhuman.
That's like, are you going to support your girlfriend enough to side with the entire Inhumans in a battle against mutants?
No, I would
it's,
not.
It's asking a lot, but yeah, you know, that's modern dating.
I mean, how long have you been dating?
I mean, this is...
If it's been over 6 months, yes, I might side with the Inhumans.
I have to say,
that's the rule, yeah.
I'm a little faltering on sides here because the X-Men, while I love all the characters, the people in charge are the more vengeful, wrathful people.
But, like, Storm's got to be in charge, though, right?
Yeah, but she's siding with Magneto and Emma Frost. And
well, I'm still
they're
like,
sort of... They're kind yeah, of muscling
the,
in.
But the Terrigen Mist is killing their entire race.
Yeah, I know.
But here's... You know, I don't want you to have to recap the whole thing for me here, Nick. But I will say, I wasn't quite sure what the dilemma was. Because, you know, Storm is not a just, let's go kill the Inhumans. Especially since I don't believe the Inhumans as a whole were the ones who said, let's release the Terrigen Mist.
And the first,
that was Black Bolt, specifically.
Yeah.
And the first issue, it Beast found out that basically the Terrigen Mist will saturate the Earth.
Uh-huh.
It'll be in the soil, it'll be everything.
Everything is juicy with Terrigen Mist.
Basically, it will continue to stay around well past the clouds dissipating.
You can't just turn a fan on and be okay.
Correct. It's basically part of the Earth at this point.
Gotcha.
And that will kill them. If they don't attack it now and get rid of the clouds, they die.
What I would take from that, the cloud is the enemy.
Yes.
Yep.
But the cloud is also seen as the birth of new Inhumans. That's part of their culture. That's like a holy rite.
Have some Inhumans, they don't need a whole bunch.
They got plenty of Inhumans. Don't be selfish.
Actually,
Inhumans.
I don't know what their numbers are supposed to be.
I don't think
hundreds,
it's like,
thousands?
I don't think it's... I mean, now it might be in the hundreds, but I certainly don't think it's in thousands.
Okay.
So it's kind of this...
They are in something of the same spot that mutants have been at times
right,
when their population
so
is low. In fact, the whole Avengers versus X-Men was because mutant population dying, one possible way to reactivate it, and like the Avengers wanted to step on
it. But this is very much two very small factions fighting it out for sort of survival. And
that's sort of depressing.
It's a little depressing, and I don't know whose side I'm on.
I don't know either, but it's the X-Men.
But I'm really enjoying the series.
I'm also siding with the X-Men, but I want Ms. Marvel and Human Torch to escape in an escape pod.
I like how we don't know anything about what's going on, but it's like, I hope they get out in an escape pod.
What about Black Bolt and Medusa?
I don't care about Black Bolt and Medusa.
Let him die in his nightclub.
Yep. Yeah, by the way, he's running a nightclub. Does no one go to him like, hey man, not cool starting a big war and then start a nightclub? Like, that's got to hurt his business.
They White Queen attacked his nightclub.
Yeah.
Does it have a known location?
Yeah.
Where is it? Is it on Earth?
Yeah, it's on Earth.
Okay.
It was basically sort of like a Casablanca. No fighting is allowed in there, but
right.
White Queen, of course.
I'm just saying, if I were to release a cloud that killed all the mutants,
yeah,
we would probably see a drop in business.
except among racists.
We don't want their business.
That's true. As this conversation has taken its strange turn, shall I move on to my secondary pick is also from Marvel and involves the genocidal Thanos.
By the way, you've picked every issue of this, right?
Yeah,
so far,
or one of us out.
And I was going to pick this too.
Yeah, I keep stealing it from people.
No, this one's yours. Okay. I would have stolen it from you.
This is Thanos number 3. When last we met, Thanos was confronted by the Shi'ar Imperial Guard.
That is so cool.
Yeah, which was a badass ending to issue 2, because this is like... Well, there, although there are new members in it, it's the classic Imperial Guard that once stomped the X-Men in the Dark Phoenix saga.
It's Thanos versus the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, yeah, basically. Not much. And he is... it's interesting because... He's having a bit of a tough time. They're super powerful.
Yep.
First of all, he is dying. That is one of the big reveals of the first issue, is that something is slowly consuming him, as if he's got like space cancer or something like that. And the story has an interesting interstitials that are kind of done in that. What do you call this format?
It's the reality show format. It's the direct to the talk to the camera thing.
Yeah,
which is
like
weird,
like a confessional.
I couldn't figure out who they were supposed to be talking to, but it was cool moments.
Right, and it gave you a lot of background. It starts out with a guy who was essentially a childhood friend of Thanos before he became a monster.
Yep.
And then they like start to talk to other people who witnessed his rise in power, the atrocities he committed. And they even mentioned, like, there's somebody who's sort of describing firsthand the events of the Infinity Gauntlet storyline.
That was my favorite cameo of the issue, by the way, of seeing that character.
I just started to say the name, but I think I'm going to refrain from saying it. And don't rewind and listen to what I was beginning to blurt out.
Nope.
But it was a cool guest shot. Really beautifully, beautifully drawn by Mike Deodato, who's been doing it from the beginning.
Yeah.
But so it's interesting, you get these kind of deep, kind of extended conversation one pages, and then big, big action sequences, big brutal fights between Thanos and the Imperial Guard. It's this is kind of exactly what I might have hoped from the comic.
Yeah,
it's energetic. It's not so it's not super, like, you know, sometimes he can kind of go into Shakespearean soliloquy mode, which can sometimes get really boring. You know, you need that kind of classic action to kind of keep it, give it momentum. And they have made sure that every issue has some very energetic sequences in it. He's still very imperious. Even when he is reeling from attacks, you're still like, oh, man, this dude's Thanos.
Yep. You know, it's like he's like Megatron.
Yeah.
He's got that sort of haughty.
It's always fun to watch him be imperious even when he's being taken down or whatever.
Yep.
And then you have these interesting guest stars that are from, you know, like slightly lesser known people from Marvel's Cosmic People, or sometimes big guys like Gladiator from the Imperial Guard. Just a really excellent mix of sort of personal stuff and the big cosmic action.
So, two things.
Yeah.
One, you're a big Lamar whore this week.
Yes, right.
And all weeks, really. But this week, you picked both of his books.
Yep. And what's funny is there's still actually a lot of Jeff Lemire stuff that I haven't read. So, I'm not overall, always on his
I think we determined stuff. That Lemire writes, like, 30 books, right?
He writes a lot of books.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And he writes a lot of books we like. Second, I know he's, like, the embodiment of all evil, genocide, all that kind of stuff, killed half the universe. I feel like it's kind of a dick move to attack somebody fighting space cancer. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah, there's, like, no support.
Yeah.
No support going on here.
I don't know. Once you destroy an entire planet...
Space cancer, Nick. He has space cancer.
So, Space Hitler has space cancer.
Yeah, Space Hitler has space cancer. All right. My backup pick is Pirates of the Caribbean number 3. I think we've talked about this book before. This is a Chris Schweitzer writes it. We like his stuff quite a bit. Artist is Joe Flood. It has a nice cartoony look. And every issue of this has been self-contained. It's
almost like each one is like a lost little movie.
Yeah, it's the adventures of Jack Sparrow and his crew, and they have the female pirate who is the other captain. They have Mr. Gibbs, his first mate, and they have
I love him.
They have the little dude whose name I don't remember.
Yeah.
Marty, maybe?
Yeah. He was mostly kind of comic relief in the background in the movies.
Anyway, this particular issue, Jack Sparrow comes across a guy who is dying aboard a sinking ship. He offers him a kindness, and a banshee provides him with a sort of, not a curse, it's a blessing. She says, may his greatest strength be yours as you carry him away. And he's like, well, what does that mean? Do I have like super strength? And he tries to lift up Gibbs. He's like, nope, what else? And they wind up going to the port to sort of, they're going to use this fallen ship. They're going to claim they were from that ship so they don't have to explain they're pirates.
Yep.
And things go awry when his power is revealed, and it's very funny. And then there's Daring Do in action as he rescues his men. This is just a super fun book, and I think people should be reading it.
It hits, I have not read this one yet, but the first two issues I remember hit exactly what I wanted from it, which is Jack Sparrow in the lead.
Yep.
There's not the goody-goodies yep. from the movie. But he is still the thief with a heart of gold, yep. so he's kind of got that Han Solo thing going on. There's supernatural stuff, so it's yep. not just straight piracy.
Yep.
But they also, there is a little bit of character nuance to it. You know, it's not like it's just crazy. They're not fighting monsters all the time.
Right.
But there's little supernatural stuff that weave through many of the issues. It would be exactly what I would want. Like, if there was a Pirates of the Caribbean TV show or something like that, these would be awesome stories to be adapting.
Yeah.
All right. Yep, I would back that, even though I haven't read it yet.
Other stuff on my list? Well, it's killing me a little not to tell you what his power is revealed to be, because I want you to read it so we can talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, don't say it.
You should read it, because it's funny. I got some laugh out louds out of that book.
Some lols?
Which is cool. I got some actual lols. Spider-Woman number 15, which I continue to love this book. It's one of my favorite books. Captain America number 10, which I know there's some controversy. I know some people are really not happy that Cap's a Nazi, and we're leading into this Secret Empire story where he's going to be like sort of
the
big bad. But this is all about him becoming the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. and after Maria Hill being sort of kicked out and what that means. And they're still going into his history of the fake history that's been implanted by the Cosmic Cube and how he became Captain America. And I'm still really enjoying it. I don't love it as much as Sam Wilson, but it's really interesting. Hulk number 2, which this is weird in that we haven't seen the Hulk in 2 issues, and yet I kind of like what they're doing with it. It's an interesting sort of.
I had to remind myself, by the way, when you said this, Randy, that Hulk is the
She-Hulk.
Hulk.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And by the way, I understand that we're trying to get away from, like, we're not calling her She-Thor. They're trying to get away from sort of the gender, but She-Hulk's a good name.
That one has been around so long, I think it lost its kind of weird gender weirdness.
So I'm a little bummed she's not She-Hulk, that she's Hulk. But it's basically Jennifer Walters being a lawyer and trying to control the Hulk as sort of a danger. And it's interesting. It's more slice of life-y than I would have expected. But it's good. It's got good art. Daredevil number 16, which is Daredevil versus Bullseye. They do not explain how Bullseye got out of the situation he was in Wade's run. But they do close off with the promise that Sewell is finally going to reveal how Daredevil put his identity back in the box, which I'm looking forward to finally finding out. It's got really nice art by Goran Sadzuka.
It'd be funny if it was just a couple panels of him going to Doctor Strange and saying, is that something you could do? And he's like, yeah, I could do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, done.
I owe you something.
Speaking of Doctor Strange, Doctor Strange 16 is Doc Strange, now depowered, basically, fighting Dormammu, which is a great story. Saga 42 has some big turning points for that. The Dregs number 1 is a new Black Mass book about a homeless guy sort of trying to become a private detective to look into what's happening to his disappearing friends. What seems to be happening to his disappearing friends is that they are being eaten by the rich. Spoilers.
Literally?
Yes.
So, the literal reversal of the old eat the rich phrase.
Yes, eat the poor.
Yes.
Loose Ends number 1 is a Southern crime romance by Jason Latour, who you might know as the creator of Spider-Gwen. And the artist on Southern Bastards. Art is by Chris Bruner and is very nice. Definitely worth a look. Civil War II, The Oath, is an epilogue to Civil War as Steve Rogers sits down and talks to Tony's not-quite-corpse. And this is definitely Secret Wars or setting up Secret Empire stuff. Savage number 3 is more of the origin of Valiant's dinosaur-fighting young man.
He's a good dinosaur fighting young man.
Yes.
Right? He's going to make us proud.
Reborn number 4 is more of the action in heaven that is Mark Miller and Greg Capullo's book. I've been really enjoying that. Ether number 3 is the really just beautiful art by David Rubin on this. It's a guy who's a scientist from our world in a world full of magic. Star Trek, not a big mystery. Batman TMNT number 3, this is the animated version. Lots of fun stuff, including the Joker facing off with Shredder and Poison Ivy teaming up with Snakevine, perhaps? Snakeweed, a Turtles villain.
Okay, I don't know that one, but
me neither.
But Joker and Shredder being in the same place at the same time, it immediately makes me want to read it.
It was fun. There's also a collection of the Checkmate book by Greg Rucka, which This book at the time, I think we were all sort of uncertain about it, but I think I know I wound up picking it up. I don't know if you did.
Yeah, I bought it previous editions before they did this nice bigger compilation. Yeah. So it had very cool Black Ops in the DC Universe stuff in it. It just wasn't quite the checkmate of the 80s that I really liked.
Yeah, but it's interesting because it's him doing his Queen and Country. It's spies in the DC Universe, and like the weird thing is like Alan Scott, Green Lantern, is the head of the Checkmate organization, and
like Mr. Terrific is his black
Mr. Terrific is part of his team.
Fire from the old Justice League International is played as kind of one of his lead characters, and she's got kind of. She's clearly accidentally like killed some people at this point.
The Batman love interest, Sasha
Bordeaux is the head is in there. Amanda Waller.
It's a very interesting mix. Sometimes with things I'm not wild about, but his craft in composing cool spy action adventure is always really strong.
Are they all going up against like Cobra?
Cobra is like the big bad. It's very much a. I mean, G.I. Joe-esque a little bit. Yeah. There's a, although not with a, not
with
goofy.
A, it's with a harder veneer.
Yeah. And I believe the Suicide Squad is in this. It's the first 12 issues, but definitely worth a look. It's one of those things that at the time I had my issues with it. Now looking back, I'm like, oh, I wish I'd appreciated that more.
Yeah. I imagine this is not quite what I think Suicide Squad readers are quite looking for, like what they're getting out of Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
But I think they might be interested in it. If you like the idea of these sort of Black Ops side of the DC Universe.
Yeah.
There's probably not going to be any better book that does it than this.
Yeah, definitely worth a look. Dave, what else is on your stack?
I wanted to quick mention just a new storyline going on in Batgirl by Hope Larson. It's got some shakeups in Babs's life. She's got, it looks like her roommate is splitting off of her. She may be moving out of Burnside. Mm-hmm. And there's a new subplot. The storyline is called Son of Penguin, and indeed it does seem
son
to
of a penguin.
Reveal something about the Penguin's very handsome son, who may or may not be a romantic interest. And there's also, of course, a question of whether he's complicit in his father's misdeeds.
Two things.
Yes,
I believe the son of the Penguin should call himself the Puffin.
I'll back that.
And second, what is the name of the artist on this book?
We gotta say it because it's A, really good, and B, when your name is Chris Wild Goose, you gotta lay that down.
Chris Wild Goose should be a fighter pilot.
This art I would say reminded me a lot of who's the artist on Spider Gwen? Who's so good?
Oh yeah,
Rodriguez.
Yes, Rodriguez.
Yes, so in that same ballpark, and I believe people who are enjoying Spider Gwen should be checking this out.
Cool.
There's a new book called Lady Castle from Boom, which I don't know anything about. Anybody?
Except it's got pretty art.
It's got pretty art. It's a 4-issue miniseries. Looks worth checking out. Some sort of fantasy thing with a trio of female heroines. Might be kind of progressive-minded. I'm not sure. Let's see. There's a new issue of Star Trek Green Lanterns, which continues to be fun. This is, the J.J. Abrams universe, the Kelvin timeline.
Yep.
And it just continues to be a fun little book.
They use Atrocitus well.
And there's always interesting to see who's getting what rings, what characters are forming friendships between the Lantern-type characters and the Star Trek characters.
Yep.
And then lastly, the first issue of DC's 12-part miniseries, Commandy Challenge, which is a nod to an old 70s character, Commandy, the last boy on Earth, which was a kind of a Planet of the Apes-ish type future where
Jack Kirby saw Planet of the Apes and really liked it.
Yes. it's as if there were nuclear wars and stuff and other animals mutated and became intelligent and, mankind was on the ropes just like they are in Planet of the Apes. But there's more like big cities and, gladiator arenas and stuff like that in that kind of Kirby tradition. But the big hook of this is that
it's a nod to another DC, the DC Challenge.
The DC Challenge, which was that they would have each issue a different creative team would deal with it, and they would have to run with whatever the previous team was doing with no major notes.
And the previous team would always leave it on a cliffhanger.
Right. And you'd be like, well, basically, the job was they paint you into a corner and you find your way out.
Yeah.
And this issue, I don't know if they're all going to be like this, has two different creative teams on it. So
I think it might be.
You'll get a sense for the vibe for it right out of the gate. Still figuring out and making up my mind on it because it seems a little close to just straight up classic Commandy, which is to say I've read some classic Kirby Commandy stuff and I like it quite a bit. So I'm not quite sure, you know, if it's just like plot differentiation stuff or if they're going to like get kind of wild with this. The deal is, I guess, a creative team, if they wanted to say that these guys go forward in time to the Legion of Superheroes time or something like that, I guess they could, because you can do whatever you want.
Yep.
I guess within reason. You're not supposed to be ridiculous, but...
What if he becomes Batman?
What if he becomes Batman? It can
so
happen.
So the first half is by DiDio and Giffen, and the second one is by Abnett. And one of the things I thought was kind of neat is at the end of the book, the letters column, the writer of the first part reveals how he would have ended the cliffhanger had he been continuing.
Oh, that's interesting.
Instead of what the other creator does. And I guess they're going to do that going forward, so that you always see, here's how the original... they're not allowed to write cliffhangers they don't have an answer to.
Right.
They always have an answer, like, here's how I would have gotten them out of it.
Yeah, but what if people read that and they're like, oh, I like that better than what the guy
did. That's the risk, isn't it? You better be a better writer. That's part of the challenge.
Nick, what you got?
So... we have the final issue of the Justice League Suicide Squad miniseries.
Which was blazed by at its weekly pace.
Yeah, ended on a solid note. I was actually more impressed with the Howard Porter artwork in here. I liked it quite a bit.
Porter's been getting good. What was it, Justice League 3000 that he did?
Yeah.
He had for sure been growing since his time doing the iconic Grant Morrison run, but with a lot of art that made us cringe.
Yeah.
And this sort of answers the question of why Batman creates another Justice League, which is nice to have.
Is it because it's always better to have two at twice the price?
Well, yeah, of course.
It's like the contact thing?
The fourth issue of Mark Millar and Greg Capullo's Reborn, which sees some violent ends for some of their characters.
How long is this series going to run?
It's ongoing, as far as we know.
Okay.
The 10th issue of Suicide Squad, which sort of ties into the Justice League Suicide Squad story.
Comes before or after it?
Comes after it, I believe. Yes. There's a story called The Cost.
Okay. Sort of epilogue-y stuff.
Then there's a one-shot focusing on Justice League of America, Killer Frost, which I rather enjoyed.
Part of their series of one-shots that they've done, the Ray and the Atom. And
I like that they're kind of... And this is because she's beloved on the Flash television series.
Yeah.
But I like that they're bringing a little bit more depth to Killer Frost's character and making her a little bit more than just, I'm a supervillain, I kill people.
The only thing I remember about her in an old Firestorm that I had was that I believe she was sort of a spurned lover who was still kind of obsessively in love with him, but was sort of like that, well, I'm going to have to kill you to make my plans happen, but if you would just join me, we could be beautiful together. And it was kind of slightly hokey, but that was her hook. It sounds like they have...
they've evolved a little bit more.
That's good.
Certainly the TV show, I mean, by not beginning with Caitlin having any ties or powers at all, they made her a really likable character.
The fourth issue of Teen Titans, which sees... Damian continued to battle his grandfather, Ra's al Ghul.
If I were him, I'd call him Grandpa Ghul.
I mean, sure. I'm sure he would call him something worse, honestly. but it's really cool, and I love the art. It's drawn by Coy Pham, who I'm trying to remember. Was he working on some Hulk books?
I don't remember. Coy Pham's done a bunch of stuff. He's really good.
Yeah, he's really talented. And then the last one, which is the Totally Awesome Hulk number 15. So I just have to have a shout-out because I haven't been keeping up with the series, but the cover has Totally Awesome Hulk teaming up with Ms. Marvel, Silk, and Shang-Chi.
Oh, that's cool.
And there are
I remember reading about this. This is specifically, those are all Asia-based superheroes.
Yeah.
But without, like, shouting it out, I guess.
Yep. They're also joined by another spy Asian that if you know your Marvel lore, you'll recognize right off the bat.
I have an important question.
Yes.
Is Jeremy Lin part of this team?
I don't think he is, actually.
Then I quit.
But there is karaoke involved.
Okay,
and if you
fair
can imagine,
enough. I just feel like Jeremy Lin should be the guy giving them their missions.
I assume that ongoing readers will know what Randy's talking about. Yes.
Not that I randomly want Jeremy Lin in my comics. Yes.
But it's a lot of fun. They deal with a big threat. But I love seeing this kind of weird, odd group come together.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. Sounds like a good mix.
Yeah. But that's it.
All right. That's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time...
Yo, Joe.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.